This is The Takeaway. I'm John Huckenberry. Thanks so much for listening. Today, the world got a first glimpse of the cover art for the first issue of the satiric magazine Charlie Hebdo, the first to be published since last week's shootings. It's not all black. It's not some somber memorial cover for the dead. Instead, it is the provocative image of Muhammad holding a sign saying in French, "I am Charlie Hebdo," and the bold title across the page, "Tout est pardonné," all is forgiven. We will look this hour at what this means, the issue itself, the image of Muhammad in a potentially offensive cartoon once again, and discuss who is responsible for any slander of Islam, and who might be responsible for taking back a religion under ideological siege for decades. Also, a look at science and space exploration and ideology in the new Republican Congress, and we will see what falling fuel prices are doing for car lovers. We begin, though, with how this latest issue from Charlie Hebdo came to be and how Charlie Hebdo's identity as an obscure, fringy bad boy of European journalism has been vaulted into the mainstream. Rachel Donadio, European culture correspondent of our partner, The New York Times, joins us now from a departure lounge at Orly Airport in Paris. Welcome back, Rachel.
Thanks for having me.
How did this issue get put together? How much concern was there about exactly what Charlie Hebdo will do?
Well, the issue started to come together just 2 days after the shootings when about 25 members of the staff of Charlie Hebdo showed up at the Paris headquarters of the left-wing newspaper Libération, which had lent them a conference room under heavy police protection with guards standing guard on the street where the newspaper is based. They came into the building and they sat down and they got to work. Now, obviously, their working conditions for this issue were much more complicated and sad than usual. I frankly am surprised they were able to pull themselves together to put out the issue, but they did under tremendous amounts of pressure and sadness. They had a long editorial meeting on Friday that began with finding out about the families of the victims and about the injured and getting updates on the status of colleagues of theirs who died in this horrific way. And over the course of the last 4 days, they met at their newsroom almost every day and managed to produce this issue. They took a break on Sunday because they were in the front row of this huge solidarity rally in Paris, in which 1.5 million people and world leaders marched to support values of liberty and free speech, for which these scrappy cartoonists are now seen as heroes. It's really a kind of ironic turnaround. I mean, imagine if something like The Onion or Punch in Britain or the good old days of the New York Observer had been thrust into the headlines as these great heroes of free speech. It's not an incredibly comfortable role for people whose mandate really is to make fun of the same political and religious establishments that have now embraced them as a cause. I was really struck in the last few days by the generosity of these guys. I mean, can you imagine trying to grapple with loss and grief, trying to put out your paper, and then trying to deal with these journalists who are very interested to see how you're even going to put out that paper? My strategy was just to spend as much time as possible there, linger around the margins, and then just try to catch these guys when they had a minute or two to chat.
What was your sense of how the image on the cover crystallized, how the message crystallized, how the consensus developed that they had an image that they were happy with?
It was just trial and error. Reynard Lussier, the cartoonist who drew the image, had been trying and a lot of different attempts. He kept trying drawings over the course of several days. And then finally, towards the end, we heard that he had one image. Maybe it had to do with the demonstration on Sunday, but then it turned out not to be the case. And then a little bit after 9 p.m. on Monday evening, we heard applause and cheers and ironic calls of Allahu Akbar, which was a joke in that newsroom. And it turns out that that was the sound of him finally nailing down the image. When I asked Gérard Biard, one of the top editors of the paper, what kind of questions they were grappling with in trying to find the image, he said, "We just wanted to figure out what to say and how to say it and the best way to say it." And the image, again, it's complicated. It works on many levels. It says, you know, tout est pardonné, all is forgiven. So is it Charlie Hebdo forgiving Muhammad? Is it Muhammad forgiving Charlie Hebdo? Maybe it's a little bit of both. But again, trial and error. And these guys are funny. They say they don't know how to do anything but laugh, but be funny. And I think they really hit all the right notes with this one.
Speaking from Orly Airport in Paris on her way out of town, Rachel Donadio is the New York Times European culture correspondent. 3 million issues of Charlie Hebdo will be on newsstands tomorrow, compelling decisions in editorial offices around the world. Under a perceived threat, do media companies embrace or avoid publishing the Charlie Hebdo images? We will discuss what decisions have already been made. In our case, we have decided that the all is forgiven image is not deliberately offensive, and you can find it at thetakeaway.org, although National Public Radio and the New York Times have decided not to publish it. But what does it mean for Islam when satire of the religion is deemed too hot to handle?
This is one of the great world religions and should be more open for satire than most institutions on earth, etc. And we don't do it because we're scared. And that means that when somebody does do it, they become the target. They become the obvious people who have done this terrible taboo thing, which shouldn't be taboo.
That's David Aronovich from the BBC Newsnight program discussing the dangers of casting Islam as a no-go zone for critics and free speech. But here are some other voices trying to counter the strident threats of terrorists and their video beheadings, or Boko Haram's gleeful threats to sell young girls in Nigeria to keep them from being educated. Have you managed to hear these alternative Muslim voices?
The ISIS do not represent Islam or any Muslim.
Because it's totally un-Islamic.
Because they're killing innocent people.
Because you're unjust.
We must all unite together and try to stop this group from damaging Islam and damaging Muslims.
Not in my name.
Because your leader is a liar.
Because your actions do not represent the actions of the rightly guided companions.
These voices are from the Not In My Name initiative in Britain of Muslims attempting to take back their religion from the likes of Al-Qaeda and ISIS. They would insist that it is they who are the mainstream in the Islamic world. What will it take for Islam's identity to be reclaimed? In the meantime, French President François Hollande laid medals for the fallen police officers today from last week's Paris shootings, and protests and rallies continue. The four Jewish victims have been flown to Israel to be buried in an emotional funeral ceremony. Is all forgiven? Is Charlie Hebdo able to pardon itself or radical jihadists with its new higher profile? Jocelyn Cesari is a senior research fellow at Georgetown University and author of Why the West Fears Islam.
Charlie Hebdo has not been targeted because of media, but as a symbol of a war that some radical activists are waging everywhere, saying that the West wants to destroy Islam. And I think we have to be very aware of that. It can be Charlie Hebdo, it can be any cultural institution. And unfortunately, in France also, the Jewish community is part of this war of the West against Islam for international reasons. So I would not limit what happened, the tragic events in Paris, as a deliberate or targeted initiative or attempt to crush freedom of press. It is not the representation of the Prophet Muhammad that is at stake, first in the Danish cartoons and then in the Charlie Hebdo cartoons themselves. Because you don't have an agreement or consensus among Muslims if it's okay or not, legitimate or not, to represent the Prophet Muhammad. So what is at stake is the borderline between critique, humor, and insult. And I would like to remind our American fellows and listeners that all over Europe, unlike what people think here, freedom of press and freedom of speech is limited by laws that prevent you to disseminate hatred, racial hatred, and negation of the Holocaust. So what we have witnessed since the Danish cartoons is, I'm not talking about the imams calling, you know, about the execution or killing of the cartoonist. I'm talking about groups of Muslims I have met in different parts of Europe who have tried since the Danish cartoons to say, let's use the legal resources that cover other groups and other situations that we can use in our to our benefit here. And they have never been heard. I'm sure you have never even heard of them. So that's the problem here, because we cannot project on Europe the complete freedom of press and media that exist here. And I think it's very important to know that if you insult racially some group, you can be charged of felony.
All right, let's
review. The line is very, very tiny. It's very blurry here.
Well, let's review the bidding here. So what you're saying is that in Europe, there are groups that are trying to create laws that will regulate this kind of speech and that they are never heard and never covered.
They do exist, the laws, John. They do exist.
Sure.
They are not trying to create them.
And there are laws already about talking about the Holocaust or recalling,
yes,
Nazism. Absolutely.
Yes.
And they're not unlike laws in the United States that were passed during the 1980s, which make it a felony to burn a flag or something like that.
Yeah.
So certainly no one would consider it a capital crime in the way that ISIS does to engage in this kind of speech.
Yeah.
So there is a distinction.
Absolutely. We have to, it's a very good point. We have to distinguish here between lay Muslims that can be offended by the representation of the Prophet Muhammad with a turban as a bomb. I'm thinking of, there is a lot of emotion by Christian where there was some kind of symbol of Christianity with, you know, represented with urine. You know, there are things this can offend. Doesn't mean you have to kill people, but you have the right in a democracy to say, I am offended. And this is, again, this kind of differentiation that when it comes to Islam and Muslim, we do not automatically make. And this makes, unfortunately, the work or the propaganda of radical groups like ISIS or Al-Qaeda even easier on young people who are fragile, who don't have any good knowledge of their own tradition, like the two brothers in Paris. And that's what I'm saying. We have to be very careful here to make differences. The moment we do not differentiate between being offended on the basis of religious conviction and being an intolerable radical activist, there is a huge march here, a huge gap.
And I guess the issue really is how we can reconcile the voices that are trying to retake Islam
with
the voices who are casting it in this radical sort of violent zone, and the silent voices in the middle from places like where you have written, even Saudi Arabia. This is a discussion that really is going to be going on for a long, long time after this Paris shooting.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Jocelyn Cesari is a senior research fellow at Georgetown University, author of Why the West Fears Islam.